Thank you very much to the organisers for asking me here. I'm going to talk to you today about one particular study that we've been doing in what is called the Museum, the National Museum of Irish Life in Dublin, which arose from a previous project that myself and Dominic were involved with, where we committed all our St. Patrick's Days and Easters for 3 years to being in Belfast or Dublin looking at people parading. That got dull because we missed out on Easter eggs and drinking. So we did okay on the drinking.
We did.
Okay, so this parades project, what we were trying to do was look at how parades were experienced by people and how people came to understand their own national identity and their own cultural identity through participation in parades. And one of the things that we did as part of that was we went in Belfast and Dublin to the commemorations of the Easter Rising 1916. And that's a big gig in Dublin. It's in the GPO. There's several parades. There's kind of a state parade, then there's another Sinn Féin parade, then there's another a parade that's run by a dissident group, and then there was another parade after that where there was more of us as researchers than there were actually people. It went on all day. There was four different events, but the big event in the GPO is invitation only, and it's quite an elite event, and then there's people outside who are trying to watch it, but they don't get to see very much, but of course they have chosen to be there. Then the Belfast event, over the years, even of our study, the Belfast event became more and more organised in many regards, didn't it, Dominic? It was kind of increasing in the numbers at it and how well organised it was and what was going on. So it clearly, and there was things happening that you could see that people were trying to represent nationalist or republican culture in a particular way at this parade. So I want to tell you a little bit about what happened in this first study. And when I talk about social identities, I'm a psychologist, so I'm talking about how people feel about those collective things like Irishness or political identities like unionism, and how they become part of who they are. So that sometimes instead of speaking as Orla, people see me as speaking as someone from the Republic of Ireland because I have a name like Orla and an accent like I do. So sometimes we are seen not as the individual we are, but much more as a prototype of the group we're from. And that makes us feel very strongly about particular positions. So I often do this with my first years to demonstrate to them how available national identities are. And it's amazing how prejudiced you can get them to be in like 2 seconds. So Harry is English. He is boring. It's a very, common one. The latest for an American is fat. Every year for the last 2 or 3 years they've given me fat. So I mean, the national identity stereotypes are very available to us. But of course the national community is invisible. We don't ever all say, let's all of us Irish people or British people meet. We don't ever have a place where we can say that we're part of this group. And often, and particularly in Ireland, north and south, there is inaccessibility of national identity. People don't like to say, oh yes, we're a very Irish family, you know, we do all our Irish practices, because you sound a little bit mad if you say that you have too much Irishness. Or similarly, in Britain, if you say you've too much Englishness or you're too into the royal family, people become a little bit suspicious of you. Are you in the English National League? What are you doing? So, and I think in Ireland in particular, if you have too much national identity because of effectively a history of conflict, that people become very cautious, so they pull away from it. So when you ask people about national identity, mostly they tell you it's not important. If you ask people about religion, it's not important. So they will, and they will tell you that it's not a central thing for them. What they will tell you is that their family is very important to them. So you can get people to tell you how embedded they are in their family very quickly. So one of the things that came out in the work that we did when we went to the GPO, which was we went in and interviewed elites, and one of the things that happened when you went into the GPO and started asking people about what they thought of the commemoration, the elite group, what became clear was we had no trouble at all talking about national identity in that context. So even though people may not like talking about it, when you go into a context where it's like commemoration, people are much more comfortable. And they will talk about how they believe that an event like the commemoration is affirming for national identity. They will say similar things about St. Patrick's Day Parade, and they won't feel uncomfortable anymore. So it seems to be a site where people have availability of the national identity. And the commemoration in the both in Belfast and in Dublin of 1916 is much more obviously political than St. Patrick's Day is. St. Patrick's Day, people kind of push the political away, but they're actually quite happy to talk more about politics in the Easter commemoration. Okay, so this is kind of the sample that every social scientist dreams of. You go into the GPO and next thing you have, you know, you're there, and next thing you have all of these TDs, MLAs, MPs, presidents, ex-Taoiseach, and they're all standing there and you have a tape recorder. So it's like, in many regards, it was like a treat to get in there. Now, sometimes the politicians didn't think it was a treat when we put the tape recorder in front of them. But we end up with a sample of people, largely male, as you would expect, but all of whom held very senior office. And we asked them about what do they think this commemoration is for? What is the role of it? And one of the things, and we also had then descendants of people in the 1916 Risings, we really were very close to the action, unlike the people on the street. So we were right in the thick of it. And one of the things, then we did, as well as that, we had other people who were then interviewing just people on the street. And one of the things that comes out very clearly, so as you can see, you don't get to see quite so much. It's not such a fun day out if you're at the back. This is where we put all the PhD students. All the fancy pants were inside drinking the tea.
I still can't believe they let you in, Orla, to be honest with you.
Nor can I. And at one stage, we did manage to get an interview with Brian Cowan, and we had the interview done, and then we had kind of a bouncer guy who came over and tried to take the tape recorder off us because we hadn't cleared that he could be taped. And we did ask him if he would mind being taped, and he said no. Then the bouncer tried to get them, so we nearly got thrown out.
But Dominic showed it on
it. You're assuming I was allowed in.
So one of the things that came up in this that we weren't expecting was that family was talked about. So even though we went in explicitly looking for national identity, what we find is even amongst the politicians, they start to talk about family. So and you find the same thing on the street. So having gone in expecting that we were going to get access to all sorts of stories of identity and national symbolism, actually what people start orienting to is family. Which brought us on to the next study that we did. Because now we decide that there's something in this, that family and nationality are somehow embedding in each other. So people see these two things as embedded. And of course, if you say family is important, and you're a little bit embarrassed about being overtly national, this could be an important vehicle. So family could be an important vehicle. Now that would be in the literature that family is an important, you can't, if you're an Irish person who has a child with an Irish person, you don't suddenly have, you wouldn't expect that that child would then be considered to be Tanzanian. You would expect that that child would be Irish. So of course we see national identity is going through families. But one of the things that we started to see in the qualitative data was that as well as families binding the nation, that the nation was doing work in keeping families together, which is actually the other way round to the way we normally think about this. So the next thing we did is in what is the old Collins's Barracks in Dublin, there is a display, an entire area that's dedicated to the 1916 Rising. And this museum is, according to the people who run the National Museum, is different in many regards to other museums in Dublin. Now, like the system in the UK, the museum is free. But what's particular about this museum is it has good parking. So this is one of the things they tell you that makes it special. And because it has good parking, and it's in the centre of Dublin, and it's free, and it has a children's play area, It tends to be families. It also has a very good restaurant, which we ate in many times when we were doing this study. It's very attractive to families because you can drive up, all the kids can get parked, all the kids can get out. There's stuff for kids to do there. They have things, you know, the way museums have things where they, you know, show kids bullets and, you know, whatever it is, a bits of crockery or whatever it is that day. So we set up a study that we were in the museum on Sundays, which is the day mostly that families go. And we did this in all of March and April, so we're kind of high season for national identity. We've got St. Patrick's Day and Easter in there for Irishness. And we're trying to look at how national identity is constructed, and in particular the role of family. So we've three things going on. We do an adult survey where every adult coming into the museum is asked to fill in a survey on the way in and the way out. We've interviews at particular places like flags. So there's a flag that was hung at the GPO the day of the rising, and then there's another very interesting flag that has that's an old flag that has a Union Jack and Irish symbols on it together. So, I mean, so there's a couple of kind of things that people wouldn't expect. So we interview them at this site, and then we have a study that is a complete nightmare to run with children and parents, where they're brought into this little room, and it is your worst nightmare, where there are 20 kids and they're trying to... And we do all this kind of thing, and we're trying to get... So we have things like this, where we ask children, do they know why we would have coloured in the top of the map a different colour? Some classic answers there. Do they know what these things are? So one kid looked at that and said, yeah, the top bit is much marshier. there's a lot of things that the kids are doing, but it's the longest 3 hours of your life putting through the kids. So we end up with a sample that looks like this, where we're looking at parent and child dyads. So we're trying to look at how the kids and the adults are related. And then we look in here as well. And I'll tell you a little bit about both sets of data there. I'm going to move this side. Okay, so I'm going to nip through that. So this is what we try and get the children to do. We're trying to get them to say, do they think that they're very like Irish people? So we're trying to get them to talk about the interweaving, which is, that's a standard thing for a psychologist to ask. But here we're trying to get them to say whether or not they're family. So using the pictures below, do you think your family and your Irishness overlap? So now it's not about me being in the group, it's about my family being in the group. And one of the things, and then with the parents, they're asked much more standard questions about identification. So what we find in the kids is that they all know the symbols. Even, like, we had one child that had Down syndrome and he was 3.5 and he could name every national symbol we had. So, I mean, the national symbols were just too easy for them. So they had all that. What you find is that in the children, that all these things are very highly correlated. If they think their family is Irish, they feel more Irish themselves. But interestingly, when the parents are strongly identified, actually what happens, it's through this sense of family. So it's the family, the seeing the family as Irish in the child is predicted by the parent's strength of national identity. It doesn't predict the child's strength of national identity, it just predicts how strongly they think their family is Irish. The family's doing something here. And this knowledge of the country and things like why the map is coloured different and those kinds of things, that's related to. So these kids seem to know more about the country if they have strong identification. Then the parents are asked what they think is important to Irishness. And this, I think, is really, for us now, has become the crux of it. How the parents are defining Irishness and what they think Irishness is about. So they're asked, do they think these are things are important? Do they think these things were important to their parents? And do they think these things will be important to their children? So each parent has been asked to look to the past and look to the future. And one of the things that you find is that there is, I don't know why I put that in again, that there is relative stability. But if you look at the scores here, what you see is that the scores are higher for what they think their parents thought. But people have a view that their parents thought all of these things about Irishness were more important than they will be for their children. The scores are going down in their heads. Now, these aren't actually what each person, and this isn't what the parents, the grandparents and the children answered. It's the perspective of the parents. So when you put that as a graph, what you find is that actually people have this concern. They think that Irishness or their national identity, I mean, I would imagine this is the case because, I mean, I've seen people argue similar things in Greece, for example, that people have this concern that there's an, if you like, their national identity is ebbing away, which of course may well explain why they're at the museum. That in some way they have to teach their children something. So I guess what the study, what we're trying to argue in the study is, and this is the first time I've presented the data, is that national identity socialisation is a concern for parents. They do want their children to know their national identity, and they think it may be receding. So they think that there are things they need to do, and that families are core components of this. And while you can overdo your national identity and look crazy, mostly people don't complain if you're very loyal to your family. So it's actually a very good vehicle if you want to use your family to imbue national identity in your children. I think as well as that, it gives a strong sense of sharedness. So in the qualitative data, people talk about feeling connected to their grandparents through their national identity and through commemoration. And I think in the bit of the data I didn't talk about there is this seems to have civic and ethnic components. And while the ethnic component may well be the one that's receding, people care about both. So that's it. I'm getting nods and waves.